That's the title track from the fabulous new Robert Plant album, Carry Fire. Gary Moore here with you, 95.5 KLOS. And joining us today, one of our favorite people on the planet, a man who has been gracing these KLOS airwaves in one incarnation or another since, well, about this time in 1969. He's back and brilliant as ever. Hello again, Robert Plant.
Good morning. How you doing?
Fine. I'm functional. How art thou, my friend?
Everything's good for me right now. I'm very, very busy. I seem to be singing with fantastic inspiration just lately. I think it's a particularly good set that we've got going on, so it's great.
You and the Sensational Space Shifters are heading into a sold-out Orpheum Theater this Friday, March the 2nd. You haven't played there before, have you? Have you played the Orpheum?
I don't think so.
Do you know about the history? Do you know the history of the place, the Vaudeville Theater and all that? The Marx Brothers played there, Judy Garland, Will Rogers.
No, I didn't. There's so many spectacular theaters in L.A., but also in all sorts of towns that we go through, and they all carry some kind of amazing story. In Chicago, there's an area there which is like the theater district where I think there's only one theater still operating, but they're going to start renovating everything. You're so fortunate that you have this remarkably broad, sweeping entertainment history. Big country, so people got around and did great residencies in all these beautiful places. Well, I always marvel when we go into, if I do a sound check, which is not that often, you know, I see the theater in its naked state before the house lights go down. And some amazing inspiration in these designs and as you say, the history behind all that stuff.
So you all are touring because you have this wonderful album out since October, Carry Fire, which I will tell you personally, I think it is truly one of your finest, from the musical textures that you have on this to the execution of the songs, the lyrical ideas. It's a very, I guess for me, it was a very mesmerizing journey is how I hear it. How do you describe Carry Fire to people who haven't been lucky enough to hear it yet?
Well, I can't really, I don't know how people, if people even consider the actions of a musician over a period of years. I mean, most people are not as fanatical about music as I am, or as you are, perhaps, or people who are immersed in music. So for the chance listener, I think there's a lot of really invigorating moments, a lot of exciting, dramatic departures, and they kind of follow the thread of what happened with Lullaby and the Ceaseless Roar from before, like 3 years ago, 4 years ago. And they continue a path which is, I think for me, it's the most productive and creative part of my time as a singer and a writer, because, I do change, but I am the same, you know. I am the same. So it's about the excitement element within the songs and the drama. And the revelation for me as a guy, lyrically, I do feel the passing of time, and I can write about it with not with a great deal of pride sometimes, but at least with the confidence to know that I'm actually talking about real stuff rather than just talking about some moment in a bar room somewhere in Texas, you know.
Mm-hmm. There's so many cool things going on with Carry Fire, all good, and especially the title track that we played. Tell me about the music on Carry Fire, the song. I think it's some of the most intriguing and invigorating that you've ever made, and lyrically what it's saying as well.
Well, musically, the actual motif is, the stringed motif is played by Justin Adams, and it's an electric oud. So it's a fretless instrument, which means that it's not governed by a European scale. So the normal scale of playing is what we know when you hear songs from our world. So it means that you can actually move into quarter tone shapes and stuff. So and between us all, we are very inspired by music from the Arab world and the Middle East, and maybe central southern Europe, you know, the sort of Spanish stuff, which is really basically a lot of the flamenco music that you hear that occasionally makes surfaces in our world, it's all coming from the same kind of place, really. It's a place of exotica, and it's a place that we find very, it's a very good place for us to be and for us to like stuff like that. We can also kick ass and just go back to the regular Western formula. So Carry Fire is really the motif. Justin invented this little introduction that allows me to start singing, and it's like a little refrain that has it's a kind of four times it comes through, and then the song begins, and it's about basically it's very, very evident what it's about. It's basically about being stranded in worlds where it's not easy to get through. And I think in my case, really, I move through so many different territories of other people's worlds. I'm like a kind of perpetual visitor in other people's existences, and that's something I have to negotiate. I have my own world back in England, but so often I'm on the move, and sometimes it's a tough call, but it has great resonance in my life. I really do like adventure, and so the song really reflects sometimes it can get tough, but it's still worth all the consideration. It's a life.
Mm-hmm. You and Chrissy Hynde teamed up on a song on the album Bluebirds Over the Mountain that I believe a rockabilly guy named Ursel Hickey wrote. After, and I'd heard this, that Phil Everly supposedly told Earl that he could write his own stuff. So he came up with this song, and then two Southern California icons, Richie Valens and the Beach Boys, covered it. Had this been on your to-do list for a while to do this song?
I didn't know about Ursel Hickey. I only knew, ironically, I just knew that the Richie Valens version, which was recorded on Hollywood and Vine, by the way, just down the road from where you are, mm-hmm. On Delphi Records. It was when I was a kid and at school, I got it. It was on the flip side of a track called That's My Little Susie, and I always used to sing it sort of, or muse it at times, because it's a kind of rockatine, sort of ballady, love songy type of thing, where the teenage guy or whatever he is, the young guy, isn't sure whether he'll ever see his loved one again, and he's looking for some sort of confirmation that it's all going to be all right. There we are, another love song. And I always used to like the idea of it, because you never really know, you know, the fact that you can take a little ditty from the 50s and then screw it the way we have. And so I like the idea of singing it, but I like the melody, but I didn't really, obviously I can't create it as a rockabilly piece. So we went into our kind of trip-hop world, which is kind of handy because everybody in the band comes from around that sort of southwestern part of Britain, where a lot of the kind of drum and bass and the various kind of Bristol music scenes emanate from, like with Massive Attack and mm-hmm. Portishead and Tricky and all that stuff. So we have a lean towards that anyway, so we could sort of psych it up a bit. And that's the kind of concept of the thing. And I knew really that I needed another voice to come in with the other side of the story, you know, mm-hmm. The pathos of this teen ballad stuff. So I approached Chrissy. She has a very strong character in her voice. She's unmistakably, you know, sultry when she sings.
Yeah.
And it needed to be like that. It needed to be a little bit like, you know, she's the girl in the song, and she's telling the guy it's okay, it'll be okay. So yeah, it was a matter of minutes, really, for her to do the singing. She's very able to jump into character, which I think is what it's all about.
You know, I would be remiss, you know, mentioning Richie Valens, if I wouldn't mention one of the most requested songs we still have from the Zeppelin catalog, Boogie with Stu, which was, you know, you guys pretty much covered over Ooh My Head with Ian Stewart back in the day. How did that come about? Was that just sort of like a loose thing that you all were just jamming around and they hit the record button?
Yeah, everything's loose. You know, I mean, Carry Fire, the song itself, or Bluebirds, I mean, you just have an idea and you press go and see how it turns out. So, yeah, that's basically a lot of songs that they start off as sketches, really, just, you know, graphite sketches in a kind of musical frame. And they either become more elaborate later on or they just stay as they are and they stay as sketches. And that's I really like that, the fact that you can actually pull the plug on something before it's developed into something monstrously produced and just make it sound exactly as it was. You know, just let's do it.
Speaking of things, the Physical Graffiti album came out actually this week in 1975. How do you view that album, that collection of songs now, today, in 2018?
Wow, how long ago was that then? 43 years ago. Well, I think it's a particularly prolific time for us. I think we were really on it there. And it was recorded at Headley Grange in Surrey. And the thing is that we all stayed in this place, in this big old rambling house, with the same black dog that had been there when we recorded Zeppelin 4. I mean, and it's like, you know, you're in it. You're in the location. You're there all together. You can, this kind of residential recording thing can go one way or the other. You can actually end up wondering why in hell's name you went there, because nothing happens, or you can have such an amazing time that stuff just flows out. And I think Physical Graffiti was exactly that side of the coin. It was really a prolific and very exciting time. I mean, we had a lot of ideas, and a lot of them came from not even starting off with an idea, just impromptu stuff, like Boogie with Stu and, Maybe Sick Again, stuff like that.
You know, speaking of anniversaries, it was a few days ago, February the 16th, when I got to see you and Jimmy and Bonzo and John Paul in St. Louis, that rescheduled show after I believe you caught the flu or something. I don't know if you remember back in those days, but that was the ultimate road trip at 16 to see our conquering heroes. What was your greatest concert journey growing up by comparison that you could remember, you know, leaving town for and going and having your mind blown?
I think mostly everything that ever happened was blowing my mind, really. there's a really, really, in Europe, there's a really famous rockabilly singer who had big hits in the UK and then France and all over, called Gene Vincent. And he had a big hit in America called Bebopalula. Well, when I was a kid, I was about 15, if you can imagine me ever being 15. So, I had a gig at the local town hall where I would be part of many bands that would open up for big stars. And one night I was on the bill getting $12 or something like that for the band and opening for Gene Vincent. And that was such a thrill to see this guy. He was from Newport, Virginia, and he had just such an attitude and such a great shape as a performer. He really could. It was very kind of mind altering, really. But there's so many other things. I mean, when I was around that same age, I remember seeing Sonny Boy Williamson at the Town Hall in Birmingham, in England, with a very young buddy guy and Hound Dog Taylor and stuff. I mean, and if that ain't mind altering, nothing, then, because that guy was such a master. And also there was a kind of the vibe of seeing him on a stage, and then the next person that comes out is Howlin' Wolf, you know. And
wow.
And you're 15 years old and you live in a kind of squeaky clean environment in, you know, in a country that's just still trying to drag itself out of the Second World War blues of a country that's been smashed to pieces by bombs and stuff like that, you know. And then you go along and you see this otherworldly stuff going on. Man, I mean, that was... Well, I started playing the harmonica because I heard Sonny Boy Williamson play this song called Help Me, and it's actually got in the charts in England. It's quite amazing how many black R&B and blues guys actually made the pop charts for selling records. I mean, for like absolute, that's exactly what they did. They were able to go into the top 30 in UK, Jimmy Reed, people, John Lee Hooker, you know, mm-hmm. Boom Boom, and that sort of stuff. So there was a huge audience for that kind of stuff. I think because we're European, you know, we never actually had socially anything to do with black R&B. You know, you guys have always had black radio stations, and you know, if you were my age or a bit older, then there would have been something on the dial that would have given you music that you might have been scared of, mm-hmm. you know. And that's that music came along, and we were completely, we never had it running alongside us in our time. You know, it was, there was a lot of schmooze radio in Europe then, and it was pretty dull. So these guys, Gene Vincent and stuff, I saw Little Richard, and I saw Bo Diddley when he had Pretty Thing come out, and he was on a tour with the Everly Brothers and Little Richard, and who was opening the show but the Rolling Stones. It was their first concert tour, and they had, what was the single they had out then? Come On, you know, which is a Chuck Berry song. And it was amazing, you know, that kind of, suddenly my whole life came into great technicolor through music and through the idea of escape from the kind of drudgery of being a mid-teens kid in England. I think that's what happened to a lot of British musicians, is we just, the lifeline came from American music.
You know, and speaking of that, it was 5 decades ago this fall that Led Zeppelin was formed. How does it make you feel today, 50 years on, that your work from those days is still not only greatly in demand, but it's still lovingly received in so many places?
Well, you know, I don't know. I'm not on that side of the fence. I'm just busy doing whatever I do. So whatever I did then is part of a sort of conglomerate picture of my life as a singer and a writer and a performer. So I love it too, you know, because you don't play the music every day. So when I do play it, sometimes I go, oh man, that's so good. Yeah, it's just part of a body of adventure, really. And, well, something that kind of, it's almost overwhelmingly spectacular to hear stuff and go, wow, what was it like for us then? And I can only remember bits and pieces of all of it because it was a bit of a frantic time.
You know, on a related note to that, we had a listener that we asked some people to, you know, if they had any questions for you, and one of them was about the How the West Was Won. That I know that it's coming back out on March 23rd. The shows from the Fabulous Forum and Long Beach Arena. What was it about playing in the LA area that made it special for you in particular?
I think the social life,
the Riot House.
I mean, it's like, I think we were kind of right in the middle of the movie that came along later on called Almost Famous. It was just, for me, I was a young guy, really young. And I just found the kind of, you know, the first thing you said to me today was, there's not a cloud in the sky. Well, there wasn't a cloud in anybody's life then. That was the great thing about it. It was a great scene, and we were only part of a scene that was big nationwide here, of a great youth culture and a great sort of powder blue, you know?
Jimmy said there's going to be some more live stuff from those years coming out at some point. Do you have a particular year or tour that you'd like to see or hear from the archives that I don't know, maybe the last one of the summer of 80 or anything like that, that stands out to you?
Well, I like the stuff that we did that was kind of odd, that we didn't expect to do. So, Jimmy and I traveled through Hong Kong, Thailand, India, and down into Morocco, and spent quite a bit of time in the pre-Sahara in the south, just before the desert begins, really. So I like all the stuff that was where we were really digging in to the kind of cause and effect of these great travels. So I think we were kind of, yeah, and also I think, I guess it's just that. We were kind of going to a place which maybe we never quite reached. But as four players, I think we had great times, and I wouldn't really pick any particular era because the music changed. We matured. You might call it maturity. I don't know what it's called, really. But, yeah, that's how it is. It was just all part of a train of development that came through and takes us to where we are as musicians today, you know, where Jonesy's finishing off an opera, and he's busy. Sometimes he plays with them Crooked Vultures, sometimes with C6 Steve. He's busy, you know. We just carry on being the same guys that we were before.
Last couple of questions. Are you a very nostalgic person in general?
Well, if you thought that the song remains the same, it kind of doesn't really. It's all change, and you have to embrace change. Not have to, you must embrace the glory of change. And but I do love so many experiences I've had, and I can savor them. So I have a degree of nostalgia, yeah. And also, you know, I ain't a spring chicken anymore, so I've met a lot of people who I really love. And I think the great thing about still touring, like as I am now with the Spaceshifters, is that I meet so many amazing people that I've known for a period of time. I can't wait to get to L.A. and hook up with people who mean a lot to me. So, but that's not nostalgia. That's just continuity, really.
Well, we're looking forward to seeing you after this tour with the Spaceshifters. Time off in another album together, maybe more with Alison Krauss again, maybe just play a lot of tennis. What do you see beyond the horizon here?
Well, my soccer team's just about to go back in the Premier League, so there's nobody more excited than me right now about that.
But hurrah.
No, I mean, I'm singing really at the top of my deal now as a guy, and I've got some really strong stuff to sing. I'm surrounded by great music and humor and charming people. And I have all these great sort of Renaissance times with people that I've known for a long time. And so I think I'm just going to keep on doing this.
It's fine with us. Robert Plant, all these years from Book of White to Blind Willie Johnson to Your Ma Said You Cried in Your Sleep Last Night to Carry Fire, you have never steered me wrong. Thank you so much, Robert Plant.
Well, it's a pleasure. I've had a fantastic run, and I ain't finished yet. So I'll see you down the line. Take it easy.
Keep going, mate. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.